So just to quickly review, in chapter 41, in chapter 40, we have the cupbearer and the baker have both enraged Pharaoh. And they enraged him to the extent that he put them in prison. Now, Joseph was in prison because of the lie of the wife of the captain of the guard. He became so enraged that he put Joseph in the prison. But just as had happened in the captain of the guard's home house, Joseph prospered in prison, and the prison prospered. It seemed as though Joseph had the kind of Midas touch that not only where he went did he prosper, but those around him prospered as well. And the jailkeeper noticed that, and he made Joseph kind of like the warden of the prison. He ran the whole prison. So now the cupbearer and the baker each have three dreams. Each have one dream. Each have one dreams. And the dreams are very similar. In the cupbearer's dream, there are three vines. And in the baker's dreams, there are three dreams. Excuse me?
Three baskets.
Yeah, but it was a dream. Did I say three baskets, three dreams? One dream, three baskets, you're right. So these are two high-ranking officials, and the cupbearer was a very influential man. So what happened was that Joseph came walking by in the morning, and he saw the cupbearer and the baker, and he saw that they were dejected. They were afraid of what these, you know, bear in mind something. If one of us today had a nightmare, you can wake up a little bit shaken up from it. It's possible. But by mid-morning, you forget about it. In Egypt, they believed that dreams were predictive. And so if you went to bed in Egypt and had a dream that you were going to die the next day, you'd wake up scared to death, or you're going to lose your land, or whatever it was. They truly believed dreams were predictive. So the cupbearer and the baker had these dreams that to them were, number one, horrific, and number two, predictive, but they couldn't interpret them. So when Joseph came by and asked them, "Why are you dejected?" they told him, and he interpreted the dreams for them, and he interpreted them accurately. Now, the interpretation of the baker's dream was that in 3 days he was going to be hung. The interpretation of the cupbearer's dream was that in 3 days he would be restored to his former position. And Joseph said to the cupbearer, "When you are restored, please remember me." But of course he didn't. And now that brings us to chapter 41. And the reason I'm bringing this out, and the reason I took a little more time for review this time than last time, is so we can get the continuity, how God is working behind the scenes here. Normally speaking, would you agree, dreams seem to be just random. I mean, sometimes something will happen during the day and you may dream about it at night. But generally speaking, dreams don't seem to have to do with anything in your life. They're weird. They're strange. But as I said, the Egyptians believed they were predictive. And so this is what was happening. Let me ask you a question, get your opinion on something. God has spoken to man in various ways throughout history. Do you think that God still speaks to people through dreams? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Undecided? Well, here's my answer. Turn to the book of Hebrews. Book of Hebrews. This is part of my answer. I'm going to add a little something to it. Hebrews chapter 1. And here's what it says in Hebrews chapter 1. Wait till you get there. And in Hebrews 1, it says this. God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers, in the prophets, in many portions, and in many ways. Now, that many ways would mean visions and dreams and burning bushes and from a mountaintop. But look what it says. In these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world. So it would appear that in these last days, and we are in the last days, God no longer makes a habit of speaking to people in the many ways he used to, visions, dreams, so forth. So whereas we find a lot of this in the Old Testament, there's some in the New Testament, but it's not very much. He spoke to Peter in the vision and so forth. So my answer to that is this. The one thing we want to be careful of is we don't want to take God and put limitations on him that shouldn't be there. So my belief is, God, if he chooses, may speak to someone today through a dream, but it is not normative. It is not normal. It is more normal for him to speak through the word. And if you have a dream that instructs you to do something or whatever, you should get confirmation. You should get confirmation of that dream through the word. Make sure it doesn't contradict the word. Through your elders and through your pastors and possibly family members and friends whom you respect. Because a dream today would certainly not carry as much weight as scriptures. So we have to be careful about that. Okay. Pharaoh's dreams. Page 149. Oh, by the way, one other thing I want to mention that I noticed before, there are various themes that run through the Bible. One of the major themes in the Bible is life and death. It runs all the way through the Bible. And that's evidenced, watch this. Turn to Genesis 2:7. Now, this is before the fall. Genesis 2:7. Then the Lord God formed man out of the dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. And a major theme in the scriptures is life. But turn to Genesis chapter 50. And let's see how the book of Genesis ends. Genesis 50, verse 26. So Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. Quite a contrast. Life and death. And Moses did say to the Jewish people at one point, I put before you this day life and death. Choose life. And when he did that, how many have been to Israel? Did you see the mountains of life and death? Not everybody goes there. In Israel, they're really not mountains. They'd be more like foothills. They're not really that high. You can see the top from the ground. They're not that high. But what Moses did was he had the Jewish people, about half of them, stand on this hillside and half of them stand on this hillside. And that was representative of life and death. And that's when Moses gave his speech. That the one hillside represented life, obedience to God, and the other hillside represented death, disobedience to God. Now, that was quite a while ago. When I went to Israel, we went there, and it's astounding. You stand where Moses would have been standing approximately. You look at the mountain of life and it's green and luxurious and there are plants on it and it's very beautiful. You turn and look at the mountain of death and it's just a big pile of dirt. There's nothing growing on it to this day. And God keeps that as a constant reminder that there's a choice that everyone has to make, whether to live and abide on the mountain of life or to live and abide on the mountain of death. And remember that God said, Moses said to him, I put before you this day life and death. And he was speaking specifically about the law. The law was actually a minister of death. But a holy man, and a holy man is one who follows God, can experience life by obeying the law and participating in the sacrificial system. So, 2 years passed after Joseph had interpreted the dreams of Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker Joseph. The cupbearer, who was eventually restored to his former position, forgot what Joseph had done for him, seeing it as being of little importance. Then one night, Pharaoh had two dreams that disturbed him. By the way, there's something you want to notice, because I'm not going to point it out every time. But there's what's known a doubling in Genesis. And you'll notice that many of the stories in Genesis, especially around this point here, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, are told twice. Sometimes once in the record of their happening, and sometimes once in the record of somebody telling about it. But many of the stories are told twice, and that in the Bible indicates emphasis or something important. Then one night, Pharaoh had two dreams that disturbed him. Okay, the first dream. In the first dream, Pharaoh was standing by the Nile River, and as he gazed at the river, seven sleek, fat, that means full of flesh, good for eating, cows emerged from the river and grazed in the marshland. Then seven cows, ugly and gaunt, emerged from the river and ate the sleek cows. The dream was so disturbing that it woke Pharaoh up. Eventually, Pharaoh fell back to sleep. Do you ever have a dream that's so disturbing you have trouble getting back to sleep and you can't get it out of your mind? Pharaoh fell asleep and had another disturbing dream. Seven healthy heads of grain came up on a single stalk. After this, seven heads of grain scorched by the east wind sprouted. The thin heads of grain ate the healthy heads of grain. Pharaoh was so disturbed by these dreams that he called together all of the magicians and wise men, and no one told them the dreams in the hope that they could interpret them. No one could interpret the dreams for Pharaoh. Now, what Pharaoh might have wanted to do, and I think I do this, not that it would be original with me, but if I were a king in these days, and it was true that people could interpret dreams, if I had a dream that I thought was really serious, I'd call my wise men around, but you know what I'd say? I'd do what Nebuchadnezzar did. Tell me the dream. And then once you've told me the dream, interpret it. Because remember, with Nebuchadnezzar, no one could tell him the dream, except Daniel. Okay. Joseph interprets Pharaoh's dream. So we now want to read verses 9 through 32. I think I may have in the notes. See where it says Pharaoh's dream? That should go 1 to 8, and I forgot to put it in there. So we're going to read 1 through 32. Better yet, so we can get the context. So it's Exodus 41. I'm sorry, Genesis 41, and starting from verse 1. Now it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he was standing by the Nile. And lo, from the Nile there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them from the Nile, ugly and gaunt. Gaunt, the exact translation would be lean of flesh, which you don't, you know what they do today to make cows weigh more? There's 2 things they do today to make cows weigh more so they get more money in market. When they eat, they have these sticks that are, you know, popsicle stick? These are like that, but they're salt sticks. And the cows lick the salt sticks. And what does salt do to you? Makes you thirsty. So they drink a lot of water, and they get very heavy doing that. And you know what else they do to cows? I was once at a friend's house who was a weightlifter, big time, international level weightlifter. And of course, he took the drugs that the weightlifters take. He took steroids and stuff like that. And while I was in his bedroom, he said to me, man, I don't know what to do with this stuff. And he showed it to me. I said, what is it? And it came in one of, you know, the little bottles doctors use when they give you an injection? There's that rubber top thing. He had one of them all filled up. It hadn't been used yet. And I said, how come you're not using it? He said, well, look at it. And I saw it. And everything on it was written in Spanish. I said, why did they do that? And he said, this is from Mexico. They make real good stuff in Mexico, but I just don't know what it's for. So I started reading it, and I can tell you this much. I can tell you what it's for. And he said, what's that? And I said, they give it to bulls. And he said, how do you know that? You don't read Spanish, I know, but I kept seeing the word toro, toro, toro. And everybody means toro is bull. And he said to me, oh, good. Because he said to me, the stuff that the veterinarians take better care of the bulls than the doctors take, because there's more money in them. But anyway, back to more relevant information. He fell asleep and dreamed a second time, and behold, 7 good ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 ears, thin and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. The thin ears swallowed up by the 7 plump and full ears. No, the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump and full ears. Then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Now in the morning his spirit was troubled. So he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servant, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. We had a dream on the same night, he and I, each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard. Notice, Joseph is still a young man. And we related to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream. And just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me to my office, but he hanged him. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph. That's the first thing I would have done. And they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon, and when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Bear in mind, in those days, Jewish men did not shave, they grew beards. And they just let them grow, they didn't even trim them. You ever see one of those Orthodox Jewish men walking around with a beard down the, like halfway down his chest? Egyptians were clean shaven. And they dressed differently too than Jewish people. Jewish people tended to wear long cloaks, where Egyptians tended to wear clothes a little more in keeping than today, but the rich people wore very ornate clothes. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have a dream. I've had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. And this is one of the main themes of this chapter, this next verse. And you'll find it repeated, and it's the key verse that shows us Joseph's leanings and his faith. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. He always gives the credit to God. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, in my dream, behold, I was standing on the bank of the Nile. Now, did you notice something? Pharaoh didn't say to Joseph, what's this with God? What God? Pharaoh was a very religious man. He just was not a believer in the living God. He was an idol worshiper. So when Joseph said, God will give me the interpretation, he figured, oh, good, good. God, there's a God Joseph knows about who can do this. But they had gods of the Nile, gods of the sun. So this was not a strange concept to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, in my dream, behold, I was standing on the banks of the Nile. And behold, seven cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Lo, seven other cows came up after them, poor and ugly and gaunt, such I have never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt. And the lean and ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. Yet when they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them, for they were just as ugly as before. Then I awoke. I saw also in my dream, and behold, seven ears full of good came up on a single stalk. And lo, seven ears withered, thin, and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed up the good ears. Then I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. Actually, what he's saying is the interpretation for each one is the same. God has told Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good years are 7 years, and dreams and the dreams are one and the same. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven thin years scorched by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh, and watch what he says, God has shown the Pharaoh what he is about to do. So you see, Joseph is not a fatalist. Joseph is a believer in the living God. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt. And after them, 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of the subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. And that's just human nature. If something happened to me that caused me to be extremely wealthy and prosperous, multimillionaire, and I was a multimillionaire for 7 years and I lost all of it, I wouldn't even remember those 7 years I was a millionaire. I would bemoan my fate. You know, we live in the present. Now, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. Okay, now we're over to the notes. And we've already read the notes for 1 through 8, so we're going to read 9 through 32. Joseph interprets Pharaoh's dreams. The cupbearer remembered how Joseph had accurately interpreted his dreams. I would say this a little differently. Now, of course, Moses said it correctly. I would say God reminded the cupbearer of the dreams, because he's in control of everything. The cupbearer remembered how Joseph had accurately interpreted his dream and the dream of the baker, and told Pharaoh about how while he was in prison, Joseph accurately interpreted their dreams, and how the predictive elements of the dreams came to pass just as God said they would. And so you can see what's happening here. God is working through people. And his objective is what? Get Joseph close to Pharaoh. That was his objective all along, back from when his brothers put him in the pit. Get Joseph close to Pharaoh so I can save my people. And we have to remember that an occurrence like this, if we had seen this happen, we might have been a little amazed about it and talked about it for a while, but that's as far as it would go. But here was an example of Ephesians 1:11. God works all things after the counsel of his own will. And if you say, well, it wasn't that important. One guy got hung, one guy got back in his old station. Everything that happens in this world is important to God because he has a purpose for it. Pharaoh sent for Joseph and told him about his dreams. Joseph's response to I typed that badly. Let me read the way it should be. Joseph's response to Pharaoh's request that he interpret was in keeping with his godly character. He said to Pharaoh, and here we go again, I cannot do it, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Joseph's response to Pharaoh's request was in keeping with his godly character. I cannot do it, but God will give the answer he desires. One of the things we have to remember that's important, sometimes when we're witnessing to someone, we get a very negative response, sometimes almost to the point of cursing and violence and name calling. But there's something we have to remember. That person's heart is in God's hand. God is not going to rob them of their responsibility and their ability to choose. But from your perspective, I'm not talking about their perspective. Their perspective is between them and God. From your perspective, God is in control of this situation. And I've said before, you never know. You may witness to somebody, and they may curse at you, and they may call you a cultist, and scream. I've had a man literally scream at the top of his lungs for about a half an hour at me. A friend of mine who was in our congregation invited me to his parents' house for lunch and said, maybe you can talk to my father. He won't even talk to me. And we started talking. And when the door opened for me to say something, I said something, and his father started to scream at me. And we sat in the living room, and for about a half an hour, and they even got to the point where we were discussing something, and whatever we were discussing could go one of two ways. And I said, well, there are two possibilities, and the two possibilities I was going to say is either God did it or he didn't do it. Those are the only two possibilities. But when I said there were two possibilities, he started screaming at me. I said, but look, all I'm saying is there's two ways this could turn. And he's screaming, screaming, screaming. And finally, his wife said, let him tell us what the two possibilities are. So he was quiet for a minute. I said, the two possibilities are God did this, and I didn't get the rest of the sentence out. He was a wild man. He was, and I could see there was absolutely no reason for me to take offense at what he was doing, because he was not offended with me. His offense was with God. You know, when you go up and tell somebody your opinion about something and they differ, they don't start screaming and yelling at you. They may state their opinion, but when they're screaming and yelling like that man was, he has a problem in his life with God and he needs God. But you may go and witness to somebody and get that kind of reaction. And lo and behold, in heaven, you're walking down one of the golden streets, and who comes walking up to you? That very person who screamed and yelled and cursed at you. And he says, I remember you. You were the third person that witnessed to me. I accepted when the seventh did. So what Paul says, one man sows, another waters, and another reaps, is true of the gospel. They've done studies. A person accepts the Lord on average every 6.7 after hearing the gospel, on average 6.7 times. So between 6 and 7 times it takes. Now, you know, there's people who accept it the first time, and I probably had to hear it 50 times. I was very hard-headed. But on average, a person will accept the Lord approximately between 6 and 7 times. Now, the only thing that skews that a little bit, when that study was done, it was done in a large denominational church, and therefore it did not include Jewish people. So I would say the number's a little higher than that now, because Jewish people have to hear it 100 times and then once more. If you would say to me, how many times did you witness to Larry before we accepted the Lord, I'd say infinity. Okay, let's turn the page, see how we're doing for time. All right, let's take our first break now. We've gone over a little bit. Okay, I'd like to read you before we continue with the text a verse from the New Testament that I think would be applicable here and in many places in Scripture. Listen to this. I'm going to read Colossians 1:16, but I'm only going to read part of it and then stop, and then we'll read the whole thing and we'll see how significant it is. For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible. That seems pretty straightforward. He created everything you can see and the things you can't see. But watch what it goes on to say. I'm going to read it again, but put the end of the sentence on. For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. And so it appears as though, like if somebody would say to you, has President Obama been raised up for God to be our president now? The answer is yes. Because to answer it no is to say God is out of control. Now, if you say, but he's not a good president, I say, Nebuchadnezzar killed millions of people. But the fact of the matter is, God raises one up, and he raised up, and he also brings down. So he raised up Joseph, but first he brought down the cupbearer and the baker. He raised them up, but he hung the baker and put the cupbearer in his old position just at the right time, just when he knew what happened, and then he had the dreams take place. So it's really amazing to see how much control God has over this world. That we tend to have control, the wind and the storms. He controls every aspect of every relationship of every human being. Everything we say, before there was a word on my tongue, you've said it all, O Lord. Everything. And we need to remember that, because what that means is the most effective prayer is a prayer that is in the will of God. And the reason for that is a prayer in the will of God will inevitably be answered affirmatively, because he works things after the counsel of his own will. What's today's date? 17th? 16th? 16th? Okay. Got it. Okay, so we're on the top of page 150, B. Joseph's answer to Pharaoh is consistent with his belief that only God has the wisdom to interpret hidden dreams, and only he can bring to pass what the dreams indicate about the future. You know, it goes further than that. Prior to creation, all events in creation were known by God. Better way to say that, prior to creation, all events in time were known by God and determined by him. This is, in fact, the central theme of chapter 41. The matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it quickly. The two dreams have the same interpretation. The reason God gave Pharaoh two dreams with the same meaning was to emphasize that God would surely bring to pass that which was predicted in the dreams. And again, that's the biblical literary method of emphasizing a point. Quite often in the Bible, an event or words or something will be doubled. They call it doubling. And it's to increase in the reader's mind the importance. For the best example I can think of is Peter. Because Peter had a dream, remember? A vision of the blanket coming down with all the animals on it. Take Peter, eat. I have never eaten anything unclean. And that happened twice. And then he was called to the house of a Gentile. And he put two and two together. And then when he went, when they had the council in Acts 15, when they had the council in Acts 15, and they were debating whether or not Gentiles should be believers. That's a little ironic today, but whether they were debating whether Gentiles should be believers, Peter got up and almost word for word repeated what happened to him for emphasis. And that's when James, the leader of the church, says, if God wants Gentiles to be saved, Gentiles shall be saved. Who knows the two requirements that he did put on them? The two prohibitions. Anybody?
Don't eat
blood, and one other. Abstain from immorality. Right. Don't eat meat with the blood in it, and abstain from immorality. Okay, see. The two dreams have the same interpretation. The reason God gave Pharaoh two dreams with the same meaning... Oh, I read that already. I'm sorry. According to Joseph, both dreams have the same meaning. Seven good cows and seven good heads of grain, or 7 years of abundance. This will be followed by 7 years of famine, symbolized by the ugly cows and the seven bad heads of grain. There are several pairs in this chapter, a pair of dreams, Moses recording Pharaoh's description of the dreams twice, 2 years passing after which Pharaoh has had two dreams, etc. This is in keeping with the rule that repetition serves to emphasize what is being written. Okay, Joseph's advice to Pharaoh. Joseph advised Pharaoh to put a fifth of the yield of the land during each of the 7 years of abundance so that Egypt will have a reserve to carry him through the 7 years of famine. Now, what that has to mean, though, is those 7 years had to really be bountiful. I'll tell you why. Suppose you have 7 good years, normal good years of harvest, so that you have enough to supply the land for 7 years. Now, suppose you tighten the belt a little bit, and each of those 7 years, you withhold one-fifth. After 7 years, you will have 1 2/5 years of grain, 7/5, which is not enough to last 7 years. So those 7 years, there must have been a tremendous bounty of grain. And it so shows that it was when it says Joseph, he just stopped counting it. There was no point. And Joseph was a very meticulous man. He can't do so much of it. It made no... if somebody said to you, how much money do you have? And let's suppose you were worth, you know, $43,273,640,000, you know... Somebody says, how money is? You say, I have a lot of money. What are you going to do? Count every penny? It was a real bounty that they had there, and it was enough to carry them through the next 7 years and have enough left over to sell to those who were still experiencing famine. Remember, the famine stopped in Egypt, but didn't stop outside of Egypt. Okay. Joseph's advice to Pharaoh, middle of the page. We have to read verses 33 to 37. Okay, chapter 41 and verses 33 to 37. Now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. Joseph seems to be thinking of everything here. You figure if there's a famine, you got to protect if you do have wheat. Let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. And in this case, when it's using the word servants there, these particular servants would probably be seen as advisors. They were servants to Pharaoh, but they probably were not the kind of servants who just waited on the table with food. These were probably advisors. The wine cup, the wine barrel, was probably an advisor. Okay. Joseph advised Pharaoh to put a fifth of the yield of the land during each... Wait, let me write something down. Okay. Joseph advised Pharaoh to put a fifth of the yield of the land during each of the 7 years of abundance, so that Egypt will have a reserve to carry him through the 7 years of famine. Furthermore, Joseph advised Pharaoh to put a wise, trustworthy man in charge of gathering. You think Joseph had an ulterior motive to say that? He's a pretty smart fellow. Storing and securing the produce of the good years. Joseph's proposal looked good to Pharaoh and his advisors. Okay. Now, Joseph's exaltation, verses 38 to 49. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this in whom is the divine spirit?" And here's Joseph standing right there, just interpreted the dreams for him. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people should do your business." Now, when he said you shall be over my house, what was his house? Egypt. Was all Pharaoh's. But he also did mean me be over his house, because I would imagine, have you ever seen, I saw on the news once, a little news clip about Bill Gates' house. He needs people to run that thing. That thing is a giant. I mean, he has rooms. I know this is going to sound a little bit over the top. When he walks in the room knows it's him. The colors on the walls all change to his favorite. The lighting changes, the temperature changes, and the music he enjoys begins to play. Welcome to my house, you trip over a can of Coke. Coca-Cola. Actually, I don't drink Coke, it's too sweet. I used to when I was a boy. Do you remember when you were... Girl, do you remember the machines you put a dime in and get a glass bottle? I remember that. Okay. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. Let me just see how far we have to go with this portion here so I don't read more than we cover. Yeah, this is through the end of the chapter. You shall be over my house according to your command. All my people shall do homage. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. We'll see what that means in a minute. Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put the gold necklace around his neck. Anybody here ever see the movie Charlton Ben-Hur? And remember he saved that sea captain in during the battle? And the sea captain kind of adopted him. And remember he took off his signet ring and put it on. That was a moving scene. Yeah. He had him ride in the second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, bow the knee, and he set him over all of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh named Joseph Zaphnath-Paneah, which probably means God speaks or God lives after what had just happened. And he gave him Aseneth, the daughter of Potiphar, a priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forward over the land of Egypt. Now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He was a young man when all this was happening. Imagine a 30-year-old, that's a boy. It's a young man in charge of the entire country. I mean, we have a law in the United States, you must be 40 years old or older to be president. Okay. During the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly. So he gathered all the food of these 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt and placed the food in its cities. He placed in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance like sand of the sea until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. I think that phrase that they use there, for it was beyond measure, more than likely is a hyperbole. You know how sometimes when you just want to, he's as big as a bear. Well, that's actually a simile because I use the word as, but he's if you met Shaquille O'Neal and somebody said, what's he like? And you said, he's a giant. Now, he's really not a giant, although he's a pretty big guy. But you're using hyperbole. But the hyperbole communicates something. Okay, verses 38 to 49. Pharaoh was so impressed with Joseph that he set him over all the land of Egypt. Only in the throne would Pharaoh be greater than Joseph. Only in the throne means things like war, rebellion, and major foreign and domestic policy. Also, only Pharaoh could veto one of Joseph's decisions. Here, let me read you another verse here that's kind of interesting and applicable to this. Colossians. I think it's 1:16. It's. I think we've already read it or it's similar, but I want to read more of it. For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on the earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. And we have to remember as believers what our place is. God created. Why do you think God created human beings? What was his purpose in doing that? He did have a purpose. There is a reason God created human beings. Excuse me? I would answer, now here's why I would have to answer that no. He is not in need of any pleasure. For me to say I'm going to do something for your pleasure indicates that my giving you something for your pleasure will enhance your circumstances. God doesn't need any of his circumstances enhanced. He did not create human beings for any reason that has to do with his own being or welfare. So why do you think God created human beings? There's a reason. Anybody have any ideas? Well, I guess I might as well tell you. God created human beings so that he might bless them. And when you read the Genesis story, how many times is the word blessed mentioned? All of creation exists to bless human beings. And what happened at the fall? The blessing was removed. They were expelled from the garden. And the plan of redemption from the very beginning has always had in mind returning human beings into their blessed relationship with God. Now, the only thing that could possibly trump that and also get a good mark on a test is say God created human beings in order to glorify himself. That's always a correct. Whenever you say, why did God, in order to glorify himself, can never be a wrong answer. Because everything glorifies God. Okay. Let's see, where were we? We got to go to page 151. Did we finish page 150? Yeah. Okay, page 151. Joseph had two sons before the famine came. Manasseh, making to forget. I can't read that without thinking about that. You know, Crosby, Stills, Nash made an album called Manasseh. And I always wondered, where'd they get that from? And I wonder if they got that from reading the Bible. Maybe they're Messianic believers with a congregation now. Manasseh, making to forget, and Ephraim, fruitfulness. When the 7 years of abundance ended, there was a severe famine in the land. The Egyptians were hit hard by the famine and cried out to Pharaoh for food. Pharaoh referred them to Joseph, as he said he would, who was in charge of the grain. Joseph sold the grain to the Egyptians and other people of the land. Joseph's wisdom in handling the famine undoubtedly increased Pharaoh's wealth. Of course, he was going to sell it at a profit. But the amazing thing right here is there was a famine in the land for 7 years. After those seven, there was abundance in the land for 7 years. After those 7 years, there was grain in Egypt because Pharaoh had taken Joseph's advice, but everywhere else there was a famine. Now, let's think ahead a little bit, and I know we've all read it, but let's just think as though we haven't. Who would be affected by this famine? Wouldn't Jacob and his sons? And what could they do about it? Go up to Pharaoh. Go up to Joseph. You see how God is... We're reading this story, and it's the story of a famine. And I could take the Bible and edit it so it's just an interesting story about a famine and a family. It was a lowly family of tent dwellers and how they came to Egypt and were saved and so forth. But here's Joseph in a pit. in a pit ready to die. And circumstance after circumstance after circumstance, we might say Satan tries to kill him. I don't think Satan was sitting back just watching what was happening. But circumstance after circumstance after circumstance, God turns what was meant for good, for evil, to turn into good. And so now all of a sudden, what we have is God's plan to put Joseph near Pharaoh. He couldn't have gotten him any closer. He ran the country for him. I wouldn't be surprised if there aren't things happening like that today. Don't be surprised during a presidential election if someone is elected in the president and you don't think they're the right man. They're the man God chose. Every world leader is chosen by God. Now, every world leader has a much, much higher responsibility before God than we do. And God can bring him down just like he brought him up. That's what he did with Bill Clinton. He raised Bill Clinton up to the highest office in the land, and he brought him down. Richard Nixon, same thing. That's why when it says, be sure your sin will find you out, even Joseph Kennedy, the father of all the, you know, Ted Kennedy, they found out about him. He was a philanderer and what kind of life he lived. Be sure your sin will find you out. Okay, any questions? Comments? I can't hear you. You got to speak loud enough for me to hear. Let me come back to where you are. I'll hear better. Yeah, I agree with that. But the word pleasure there doesn't mean pleasure like banana split. Okay, thank you. All right. No more questions, comments, words of wisdom?